And Mike and Mike's off-air podcast number 25, rolling. And Mike O'Neill right here.
All right, it's way too far for me to remember what my life was like when I was 25. I haven't seen 25 in more than 25 years. So
I don't want to think about that at all, because I used to joke with my wife. And my wife would say things like, gosh, I wish I could have my 18-year-old body back. And I would think, I sure wouldn't want my 18-year-old brain back. But then it occurred to me, the brain was fine. I just never used it back then. So that was
you're saving it up for later in life. That's
yes.
All.
Well, now that I know a thing or eight or ten.
Well, you've got a sheet in front of you, so I know you've got some good stuff. So I'm going to steal the spotlight for just a second. It was something that I talked about on the air this morning that really got some good reactions, not only on Facebook, but also got some great calls with this. You've heard of a bucket list.
Of course.
Wondering what is on your bucket list. So either something you just will never do, maybe a food you will never try because you just know you're not going to like it, you're not going to enjoy it, or maybe something you did once or twice, and because of that experience, you will never do it ever again.
Well, my ex-father-in-law had me try raw oysters once. That won't happen again because they'll come right back up the same way the first ones did. But I don't like – I will never have any raw anything. It's just not for me. For me, sushi is bait. For my wife, it's heaven, absolute heaven.
I love sushi.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people do. It's just not for me. I want
a little bit of wasabi. Actually, a lot of wasabi. A little soy sauce. You dip it in. You don't have enough wasabi unless your eyes actually water after the second piece goes down your gullet.
And as for me, if it's not barbecued, it's not food. So, you know, we're all a little bit different.
Well, they do have eel. Eel is technically sushi, and it's on the bed of rice, but it is prepared somewhere. It is cooked. So maybe that's like a segue for you.
Isn't it rubbery, though? I've heard. I don't know.
It depends on where you go. We go to Gozen every once in a while.
Mm.
Once a year, twice a year, special occasions, things like that.
Garlic,
and my son,
fried rice.
Who's
garlic,
15,
fried rice, sorry.
Loves it. The sashimi, I don't think you would like, because sashimi is nothing but the raw, whatever it is. But sushi, at least, it's usually on a bed of rice, or they'll do like my wife loves the California rolls.
That's how my wife gets me through it. That's how my wife gets me through it. Pile everything around that thing that I would normally try to catch a fish with, and off we go.
All right, so that's a food. Any particular thing that you will never do, or maybe you've done once or twice?
Oh, what? I've never done this, and I will never do this.
Can I guess? Bungee jump.
Close.
Okay.
But heck yes, no. similar, I will never parachute jump.
Really?
When I was younger, I thought that would be so exciting. Then I became a parent, and it became something that I didn't feel like I could allow myself to do, because 1 in 100 or whatever the number is, something goes wrong. And I didn't think that I could allow myself that thrill as a dad. I had a good time, splat. Well, you're not a dad anymore. You're dead. And I just didn't seem like something I could allow myself. But I also am terrified of heights, so it's never happening.
I am petrified of heights as well. I did a tandem skydive once years ago, and I told myself once I turned 50 I was going to do one every year from that point on.
Wow.
And it's just so happened to work out that every year when my birthday rolls around, our financial situation does not afford me the opportunity to go skydive. So I'm hoping this year, because I remember when George H.W. Bush was still with us, that he made a big deal. Granted, he was in the military at one point, but every year on his birthday up until his passing, he would skydive.
Good for him. Good for him. And my wife would do something like that too. This is a girl. If they had this at an amusement park, if they had a ride where they would slingshot you straight into space, she'd get in line and she'd be on it first. She loves everything where they drop you from the Empire State Building straight down, and screaming and giggling all the way. I just pass out. That's her.
Now, the one that I talked about on the air, I actually got a phone call saying ditto, was snowboarding. I did it once last year. Made a big deal about it on the air, too, that I've been skiing. I've been to Heavenly, going down double black diamonds on skis.
See?
But never snowboarded. I'm like, you know what? As much as I love skiing, I got to give this a shot. Everyone who does it seems to have fun and enjoy it. I couldn't stand on the board still and keep from falling down.
Well, Mike, that was my skiing experience, and I can surf decently, body surf like a G.
Uh-huh.
I'm an amazingly good body surfer. Thanks, Dad, because that's what my father was into. And I've tried surfing, and I didn't fall off.
Okay.
Skiing, I went – my first year of college was in Denver, Colorado, so I knew I was going to try it. I fell down 30 times in as many feet. It was just – it wasn't – I don't know. I just didn't figure it out. Probably if I put more time into it. But and also, by the way, guess what? It's cold. That's not my favorite thing. You're like, hey, this is fun until just like when I was a kid. Snow's fun until you're all wet. And it doesn't take that long.
Well, since you've surfed, from what I've heard, having never surfed myself, I've boogie boarded and body surfed and done that. I'm really good at that. But I have been told that the closest comparison to snowboarding is surfing. So if you can surf, maybe snowboarding is your next bet. Although, again, it is cold up there.
I try it just for the comparison.
And if you can do it without falling down as many times as I did, as I joked on the air, getting snow in places I care not to talk about,
woo-hoo!
You're a better person than I am.
Well, all right. Hey, let's. I'm trying to. Basically, my intent here is for our listeners to get to know us a little bit better. And I thought we would take a look. I'm 66 this year, and you are
55 later this year.
So we've both owned and loved albums.
Yeah.
And I mean, I like them a lot more than a lot of other people do. I've got probably, well, a bunch of them. I don't even know how many I have anymore in my garage. Hundreds and hundreds of albums in my garage. And I was thinking about this, and there are so many albums that were so important to me. Do you remember your first record?
I do.
What was it?
The first, it wasn't a record. Again, it was slight, again, age difference between the two of us. I remember it was the first one I bought with my own money.
Yep.
And I was very happy with that. I had a lawn mowing business throughout the neighborhood.
Entrepreneur.
And we had a bigger front lawn, so it was a riding lawnmower. So it was cool. I actually get to drive the lawnmower to people's houses, sometimes like half a mile away, and mow their lawn. And I made money that way. I bought Men at Work's Cargo.
Nice.
And I've mentioned this on the air that at the time, my son and I are very literal in a lot of ways, in that I cannot have two bests. Because everyone asks me, who's your favorite? Like, your favorite group? I'm like, well, I can't have more than one because favorite means only one. So I had to choose as a kid either Hall & Oates or Men at Work.
Wow.
And I chose Men at Work for whatever reason.
That's so fun.
And I wanted Men at Work's Cargo when it came out. So I got that on cassette and I listened to it. I still think I have it somewhere, actually. And I've got the CD as well and the digital download at this point as well.
Well, I don't have either one of these, but my first actual record, because of the age I am, was a 45.
Okay.
The Monkees, I'm a Believer.
Oh, wow.
I'm a Believer, and I gave it to Christy, I can't think of her last name anymore,
oh,
in the third grade, because I just thought she was amazing, and she didn't even know I was alive. And
who the Monkees were.
We knew who they were. They were a big
deal. They did. Okay,
we were a big deal to them. They were a big deal to us back then. The first album I ever owned, though, was it came out in 19 – I had to look it up because I wondered, because Pat and I, my brother Patrick was a year younger than I, both got our first album that year because we got a record player, our first record player. And I got Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water because I really wanted it bad. Pat got the the Fifth Dimension album, the one that had the Days of Aquarius and Let the Sun Shine.
Okay.
So that was 1970, I think, for that record. So that makes sense that was that Christmas.
All right.
So those were our records. And I just remember, I mean, great hits, Troubled Water, the title track, Celia, and El Condor Pasa was a different but good hit. And there was a song on there called The Boxer, which was
I know that one well.
Deep for a guy who was just really getting into albums.
La, la, la. La, 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 la.
Great record. Great record. They wrote such great, great things. I think my most and then the next ones I'm looking at right now in my head are the most remembered records. A few of them anyway. I could probably put 1,000 of them, but a few that I picked maybe was the Boston One, their first album. It was so unique in so many ways. It was the first album that was equalized for FM airplay. If you listen to it on your record player, it's very bright. It's very bright.
Okay.
It's like the treble controls turned up. They did that on purpose. they wanted it to cut when it hit on FM, and it did. It cut like a knife, and that basically turned into what Mutt Lang does on every record. You know, what most producers began to do after Tom Scholz figured that out. They all did that, but every single cut on that record was released as a single. It was one of the first ones.
Interesting.
Every single one was released as a single.
It's funny you mentioned them. I got, and again, slight age difference, Stage 3.
Yeah.
When that came out. I got it on cassette, and I remember in reading the liner notes of it, and I don't know if they've changed it since then,
nope.
If anyone did what I did, but they made a note in the liner notes on the cassette that they were very, because that's when digital recording started to become a thing. You would see a lot of notations on like cassettes, DAA. So it was recorded digitally. It was edited with analog tape,
and then it was
released to the public on analog. So you would see a three-letter distinction until it got to DDD, where it was all digital, and then nobody cared anymore. But with the liner notes with that cassette, they mentioned something to the effect of, to preserve the tape in the recording process, we had to put a substance on. They went all the way around talking around the fact that they used Vaseline, basically, on the tape itself to keep it from sticking to the other parts of the tape. So I thought that's what I had to do. So I smeared Vaseline on the cassette tape, put it in my tape player in my car, and needless to say, tape player had to be replaced after
that. I was going to say, you broke both of them.
I don't know. I haven't thought about that in years. And thanks to the memory.
Perfectly sounds like something that I would have misinterpreted and done just as well. Since you mentioned liner notes on the album, the Boston One, do you remember how all the way through, if you read the liner notes, about every half a paragraph it said, play the record. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Just play the record. Yeah. It was selling itself. Da-da-da-da-da. Uh-huh. Just, it probably said it 5-6 times. Go look. It's kind of cool. Another album that was a big deal for me back then, I listened to a lot of rock back in the day. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road by Elton John. And Elton wasn't necessarily who I listened to back then. I was more of a Who, Led Zeppelin, rock kind of guy. But this album was special. There was something about it. I mean, the first track on it, Funeral for a Friend, which segues into Love Lies Bleeding, it was the first really long 7 or 8 minute long rock track I'd ever listened to. Mm-hmm. And it just drew me in. It made me interested. And this really wasn't progressive rock, but in a sense. And it made me interested in things like Rush and other bands, Fripp and Eno and other things down the line as I got older. Thanks, Elton. You did that. And, I mean, the great hits on it. Candle in the Wind, Benny and the Jets, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Such a great record.
Yeah, a lot of singles off of that one, obviously. And then obviously taking that name when he had his Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour, which wrapped up last year.
Yeah, I wish. Did you get to go see that, I think?
I didn't. Jennifer Grant, who does Middays, she saw that tour very early on at the Chase Center in San Francisco.
Man.
I still haven't seen a concert there.
I haven't either, but I would love to have seen Elton John. A little Elton information. Were you ever at a radio station where Ford would take you out, it was the Ford Adventure, and they would take the morning show, they would take you out, and you would drive whatever the car they were selling is, and like it was the Mustang, then you're on a racetrack. Uh-huh. If it was one of the big SUVs, we went up the side of Mammoth Mountain once.
Wow.
Well, we did the Mustangs 1 year, and I got to go. I was over at the other KJUG when I was working there, and I can't think of, I think Davey Johnstone was Elton's guitarist most consistently through. He's also a race car driver. Davey was my race car driver.
Wow.
I got to meet him and tell him how much I enjoyed Saturday Night's All Night for fighting the guitar in there. It's just a high E chord, nothing special. But I always, that will always be, if there's ever an album called Songs You Have to Listen to at 11, that will be on it. Because that song just sounds great, cranked all the way up. And Davey's guitar work got my attention on that anyway. How about what's another album for you?
I would have to say, for a multitude of reasons, and I'll touch on a couple reasons that I can think of off the top of my head, Chicago Transit Authority, their first album. When you think of their stuff now, you think power ballads.
No.
And they haven't released a radio release in years. They keep on coming out with albums every other year or so at this point. Then the lineup has changed quite a bit. they still have two or three of the original members, including Robert Lamb, who was one of the primary songwriters. But you go back to that album in particular. There was I'm a Man.
Yes, my favorite.
Question 67 and 68 mm-hmm. was on that album. Saturday in the Park was more of a ballad-ish type song, but there are some rock songs on that album. And I met them, second time I think I met them was at in the Concord Pavilion, Bay Area. And I had the album with me, and I was starstruck because I loved them. I really got into them when Chicago 18 came out. Towards the end of when 17 came out, and then 18, 19, from that point on, I got everything on vinyl I could. So I had the album. I'm standing there as a teenager in high school with the album, standing in front of Walt Perizzator, and I hand him the album. He's like, "You're much too young to even know any of these songs." And he signed it, had this conversation with my dad, which I remember to this day as he's signing it. I took it around to everyone else who made themselves available for that little meet and greet after the show. And I still have that album signed by almost everyone that was after Peter Cetera had left the group.
That is so cool.
So I don't have his signature on it, but I have just about everyone else, except for Terry Kath, who accidentally took his life years prior in an accident. Basically, and everyone talks about this. You know, I'm hijacking your conversation.
You're doing
again.
Fine.
It was everyone thought that he committed suicide. He was in a dark place at the time, but he was big into guns at the time. He was thinking about leaving the group Chicago because he didn't like all the horns. He didn't like the direction of the power ballads. He wanted to get back to pure rock. In fact, at one point, I may have mentioned this before, that Jimi Hendrix raved about Terry Kath's guitar playing.
Yeah.
So he was well respected. So he had a gun at one point, and his friends were with him. They were drinking, and he said, hey man, be careful with that thing you've been drinking. He's like, man, there's not even a bullet in the gun. Let me show you. Held it up to his head. Click. Boom. Didn't realize, although there was no magazine in it, there was a bullet in the chamber.
And I remember that. I remember that. That was an awful, awful, awful accident. But in terms of their music, some of the best musicologists you will ever get to see. I have seen them live. I've seen them live a couple of. They actually came through here. They came through the Tulare County Fair one year.
Wow.
It was either here or Hanford, one of the two. But I just remember thinking, wow, they are every stinking bit as good as they ever were. And sorry, Peter Cetera, but I think I, along with Mike Pesto, really think you were wrong. The ballads were gorgeous, but the wonderful melding of the actual straight-up-ahead rock and roll and the horns.
Yeah.
It was almost a progressive rock jazz that no one else can do like they do. It was so, so, so good.
On their second album, Ballad for a Girl in Buchanan, I mean, it truly shows that they could have gone the progressive rock route in that two or three singles came out of this one piece of music that was all layered together and was a combination of writing styles. I think everyone wrote something for this one piece of music. It's like 20 minutes long. If you ever get a chance to check it out, Ballad for a Girl in Buchanan on Chicago's second album. Some people call it Chicago, too, but it's just called Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. And, you know, I think courtesy of anybody who used to have an iPod, and if you put it on shuffle, and it was just always so weird because we all like all kinds of different music, and it's all weird. I'm a giant classical music fan as well. Thanks, Dad, because I grew up in my father's house, and that's all my father listened to. So I had no choice but to at least be aware of a lot of it, and I loved Handel's Messiah.
Okay.
To the extent that I actually had, I have three versions of it still on vinyl. And my dad and I went to the Hollywood Bowl and we got to see it there. And it was absolutely wonderful. And yes, we stood during the Hallelujah Chorus. It was absolutely pretty cool. In fact, there's a lot of classical music. Beethoven's First, the Sixth, the Ninth. There's so many things that I like. And it's just, I mean, that's the great thing about music. There's no good music. There's no bad music. Whatever you like and enjoy it. And that's just I think, the way it should be approached, because it's unfair to those that might not like what I like and vice versa.
It's interesting you bring up listening to music in order, like especially on albums. I remember when Eric Church's The Outsiders came out, and he was adamant about saying, this is not one I want you to listen to and put the CD in, back when CDs were still the thing, and hit shuffle. This is an album you really, if you really want to appreciate it for what it is, what I want you to get out of it, you need to listen to track one, track two, track three in order. Especially, he said, what would be side B on an album. So maybe play around with shuffle for the first half, but the second half, because there are certain songs that really, they belong back to back to back, because it you appreciate them more. It's like if you were to read a book and start with chapter one, they go to chapter seven, they'll go to chapter three, go to chapter five.
No, I agree. I mean,
it doesn't make sense with that particular album, and many albums back from that era.
A lot of albums really were albums. Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, iconic and perfect and in order for the love of God. In fact, a lot of them, there's, I mean, having been in rock radio, there are no track breaks for some of these. They just start and you got to pot it up.
Now, is that the one that there was the theory at one point that if you started it on the Lion's second roar with Wizard of Oz, that it was actually music intended for that movie? Because I know one of their albums, there's that lore that goes with it.
I remember something about that, but no, I never really put my...
I couldn't remember which one it was. Dark Side of the Moon or one of those.
I can't remember. Dark Side sounds about right, though. And an amazing album indeed. And another cool album. Do you remember, were you ever a Cream fan?
No.
I mean, that's really, they're really, I'm dating myself again. The Disraeli Gears album. You have to check it out. It's gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
It's a million different colors. And it's one of the most iconic albums, covers of any album that's ever been made. And if you saw it, you'd see why. I had it made into a very expensive t-shirt back in the day. And I thought I was so cool back when you could do that. But yeah, I love that. It's the most Sunshine of Your Love and some of the other songs on it. But just an amazing, amazing album cover. Sort of like, do you remember the Led Zeppelin III album cover?
I never got into them, and I'm not exactly sure why. Just musically, I know I would appreciate what they did. And especially in, you know, I wouldn't say recent years, but back in the 80s and early 90s, how much of their stuff was sampled, especially by the Beastie Boys.
Right. But Zeppelin, I would not say Zeppelin III was their best album. Mm-hmm. I would be more inclined to say 1-4, the double album that won't come to mind right now.
It's a Physical Graffiti.
Thank you very much. were probably their best. But Zepp III had a rotating picture wheel behind the album jacket.
Oh.
It was really trippy.
Okay.
It was just one. It's like, what? What? Why? Okay. Well, because you're Led Zeppelin. That's why. And it was just really cool. And I think my last one that I will quote as a record was the Fleetwood Mac Rumors record. And the reason this one stuck with me, as you got into it, I mean, we were aware of one. Everybody was aware of at least one of the hits off the radio. But then as you got into the record, it became immediately apparent that this came out of real-life explosions of at least two relationships in the band, and that these guys are...
Let me guess which two.
Yeah, well, it was two plus one. I mean, until I went back later and looked back and realized that it wasn't just the Lindsay and... My brain won't work. Female lead singer.
Yeah, I'm blanking on her name now,
too. Sorry.
Man, I can't believe that.
But anyway, those two, uh-huh. Obviously, they were a train wreck in motion. But then once that failed, she became involved with the drummer.
With Mick.
And then, wow.
I mean, other than the two that were married, there was, and even with them, there's some talk, at least, that there was a lot of swapping, if you will,
yes,
well, with Fleetwood Mac.
We'll leave it at that. But yes, indeed. And it just, boy, talk about life in real time. Just listen to the record. You're like, wow, that happened? Good Lord. And how do they get on stage every night and not want to ring whoever was hurt at the moment? How did they get past wanting to wring someone's neck rather than get through the song alive? Because it's like, you're literally yelling this at me right now in front of 30,000 people. That had to be nearly impossible.
I may have mentioned him before. I think it's Professor of Rock, who has a YouTube channel. And he does deep dives into a lot of, I mean, he can't stand music of the late 80s through now. So he doesn't talk much about that at all, except to bag on it. But gets into music from mid-'80s all the way back to the 50s, and we'll do deep dives on albums, songs, artists. It's definitely a channel I would recommend. In fact, I've been trying for the past year or so to get him on and talk with him about the channel and the interviews that he's done, and hopefully at some point, fingers crossed, I'll actually get him on. But he's pretty tied in with a lot of the stories of Fleetwood Mac. He actually, one of the shows I watched was his breaking down of that album in particular, and him talking about all the swapping that was going on at the time.
Can't even imagine, man. I've said this before. I barely have enough energy to do a good job in my relationship. Where would I get the energy to do anything more? I can't even imagine. Well, those are my albums.
Some of the ones I hesitate saying albums because albums screams to me vinyl. But Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill.
Yes, yes.
I was living in Las Vegas at the time. And a lot of times I think when albums drop, it's just the timing on it for you personally. Sometimes it'll speak to you. Sometimes it's going to take a while for it to speak to you. That one spoke to me immediately. I mean, I don't know if you get in touch with my feminine side or what, but there's a song on there called Perfect.
Yes.
Which I'm... We played it, and there's some language in that album, as you know, if you have it. We warned the kids, I said, you know, because when we take long road trips, we put something from YouTube on and we just kind of play it. And whoever drives gets to pick. And then we sometimes rotate. But I'm like, Daddy wants to hear this album. I told my daughter, I think you're going to like it. There's some words in there that I don't want you saying. But my wife and I, as long as we have those conversations with our kids, we don't mind them hearing those words as long as they know those words are for that person. Because that person was an adult when they sang that album, not for you. And the song Perfect came on. Which is, I'll just give you a cliff note version of it. It's, you have to listen to it, especially if you have a daughter. It's basically a daughter being told that she needs to be perfect, but not in a mean way. So I can see myself as a parent having these conversations with my daughter, but the song is from the child's point of view. And realizing what that does to, in this case, her.
Was such a great write.
I started tearing up as the song was on. I reached back and I held my daughter's hand halfway through the song. I'm like, Daddy loves you no matter what you do.
I didn't ever tell you any of this, did I? No, I have three daughters. I get it completely. Boy, I'll tell you what, I'm a different dad than when I started. Perspectives change. Mm-hmm. You know, you want so much for your kids to be the best that they can be. And then you realize in most cases, if you just let them be, keep them safe, they'll be fine. And I don't have to define their road for them. And I think a lot of times we parents, we feel like we have to try to define the road for them in order to keep them safe. They know where they're going. Just keep them out of the ditches. Yeah, that's all you got to do.
Especially at my daughter's age, just tell her, listen, I know you don't like this particular subject, but you don't get it now, but getting a bad grade in this now could possibly affect your future.
Yeah.
Let me help you do as good on this as you can, and we'll find out from your teacher what your teacher expects as well. And so we'll find some happy medium that's maybe a little higher than what you're reaching currently, but – you know, it's again, you have to customize your parenting, and kind of hearing that song made me realize that. Another one that is much more contemporary that I got into after the fact was American Idiot from Green Day.
Yeah, I know you love them.
I'm blanking on the name of the song now, but it's like a 10, 12 minute song. I mean, it's like their ode to progressive rock. It's We're Gonna Bother. It's like the second song on that album. And it's always one that is one of the last songs they play in concert, I found out, when I saw them at Dodger Stadium.
Really?
And it's one of the last songs they played, and then they end with Good Riddance, Time of Your Life. That's always the last song they play, where Billy Joe Armstrong comes out on stage, just him, and acoustically plays that song. And then, good night.
Second cut on the album?
It's something about Suburbia.
Jesus of Suburbia.
Even if you never listen to anything from Green Day, just appreciate the musical changes in that from one piece of music to another. I kind of like that Ballad of a Girl from Buchanan.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier. It's that album got me through the death of my dad because I listened to that album constantly driving from Visalia to San Francisco when he was at UCSF. I mean, there were some times I would literally drive from here in Visalia to San Francisco to Paso Robles and be back here all in one day and listening to that album on repeat the entire time. The energy kept me awake,
yep.
But now the emotion of it, remembering when I listened to it for the first time and thinking about my dad, it has a whole nother level to it.
The Led Zeppelin album I couldn't think of earlier, the double album, which you can, it's called
Physical Graffiti,
is the one I used to listen to when I would drive.
Okay.
From here down to the, because it would get you all the way there. It's a double album, almost anyway. That I had, because it was the driving. It wasn't necessarily, and unlike the one you're discussing, it wasn't the lyrics so much as just the drive. Just get me there,
okay.
Boys. Just get me there. And by the way, Stevie Nicks.
There you go. Okay, thank you.
I couldn't let us get out of this without us both being, because I know some of our listeners are like, dude, you don't know who Stevie Nicks is.
Our program director would have written this up if you didn't come up with that.
We know who Stevie Nicks is. It's okay. It's okay. Wow, so much great music, man.
Yeah. Well, it's what we do for a living, so we kind of know a little bit about it.
I do. In fact, there was a while that I think my parents were convinced that I was going to be driving a record player right through college and into life. So, well, technically, I guess I did.
Yeah.
I guess I did. Here I am, getting ready to go on the air, play some records.
Yeah, in that case, we should probably wrap this up because you do have to get on the air soon.
All right. Well, then, that's that for this one. It's on you next trip.
We'll see what happens.